system. We're ready to
recording has started.
Launch into this call. How is everyone today?
Good, great here.
Great. Okay, today we are going to be talking about something that's actually of importance to, I think, a school of really any size, and that is, you know, staff management, staff hiring, staff training, incentives, and goal setting with your staff. One person who I know who does this particularly well is Renchi Alvarigo. And I'd like to introduce him. He's going to give you a little bit of background on the topic that we're talking about today and about how his school has come, you know, he's developed his staff from when he started to now. Before I do that, I just want to go over a couple of things. You know, this is a fairly new venture for us, these conference calls. I think this is about our fourth or fifth there.
Yeah,
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. And we're trying to refine it so that it's a little bit more streamlined and we can get as much information into an hour's time as possible. So just a few things. We are going to be breaking this out into about four topics. Each topic should last probably about 10 minutes, and it will be directly followed by a short question and answer session after each topic, so about 5 minutes of question and answer to Renchi Ali or if any of you guys have any commentary. And I ask that you hold all questions and comments until the introduction until each topic is completed, and we'll let you know when that is. You guys can go ahead and ask questions away. At the end of the call, we will have an open question and answer session, so that should give you guys all an opportunity to ask or ask any questions that you have or make any comments that you find necessary. In addition to that, actually, I think that was about it. It was the only comment I had to make. So I'm going to let Ali take it away.
Great. How's everybody doing out there? Everybody on the line? Anybody available to say how's everybody doing? Okay.
Doing great.
Yeah, we're on here.
Yeah, I just need to know you guys are there. Wow, today's been a hectic day for me. I was woken up at 7:20 this morning. We had a break-in in our Port Jeff location where they threw a potted plant through our window and stole money out of our cash box and did some damage, stole some weaponry and some gear, and hit another 8 stores in the shopping center around town.
Oh, no.
Yes, I'm a little frazzled, but it's a good day so far. Other than that, I'm happy. It's sunny and beautiful. So I guess you want me to go over. I have your outline, and it's phenomenal. Thanks for giving it to me, and I think it's a great thing. And I know you had said for me in the first topic you were talking about describing past staff situations,
mm-hmm.
and the second topic was describe the current staff, and the third was how has the staff affected success. Well, first off, I came from a background where I owned a construction company, and I had huge amounts of employee turnover. And, you know, in that field, it was the kind of field where it was just unbelievably difficult work. People are out in the heat all day long, so you kind of expected turnover. In our field, I think that the reason why I'm so successful, because everyone looks at this as a job where they can make a future, and I think that's where a lot of martial arts schools fall short. You know, they're not setting up their employment as they were like if they were an IBM. And they really need to, everyone really needs to think of their company as a long-term proposition where everyone's looking at it from the employee's point of view where they can say, wow, I do have a future in this, or else what we're going to do is just get a constant turnover, and one, that's going to hurt us because the staff gets, the other people, the parents and the students get used to them and they leave. It shows this inconsistent kind of staffing issue, and the second reason is that we want to make sure that they're going to be around to help us grow the business, and that's the key. So once I realized that and I started doing things in my school where I put things in effect, like, you know, vacation days, and I put together packages as far as commissions and things of that nature, and I made it more appealing to them where I have guys now. One guy was a licensed electrician making a great living. Another guy was the head mechanic at an Acura Honda dealership making a great living. I had another guy who was the head of Symbol Technologies, a computer software company, who now works for me. I have another guy who was a physical therapist, went to school for that, and now he's a full-time instructor on my staff. I have two administrative assistants that I stole from law firms that are actually working for me full-time. And I'm able to get these people to, and the whole key is to keep them with me and build the vision and be able to grow and have them feel like they're going somewhere with the company. So right now we're up to 10 full-time employees, and we have 6 part-time employees, and that's spread through 5 schools. So my average staffing in a school, if I was a single school operation in the very beginning, is one head instructor and one assistant instructor / administrative assistant program manager kind of guy. And the duties of the instructor, head instructor, and the assistant instructor program manager are, they're kind of intermittent. They everyone has to be the cook, the cleaner, you know, and everything. And they handle all the functions totally between them. In some of my larger schools, I have, you know, three or four staff members. In a school that has 450 students, I have two floors where I have two full-time instructors. I have about four part-time instructors. And I also have an administrative assistant slash program manager in the office where she's doing all the contract entering. She's doing all the renewal calls. She's doing all the 2-4-6-week calls. And she's also doing the, you know, entering of contracts in APS and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of crossover, but at the same time, I want every one of my staff members to know every facet of the company. But there is some crossover where, you know, actually there are some specifics into the job description where some people only do one thing and they don't do other things. And I also find, too, one of your other things that said, describe some past staff situations. I don't know, Joanne, are you looking for stuff that happened that were negative or positive or...
I mean, how has your staff kind of come up from, you know, when you first started? Like, a lot of people start out and they have this impression that, obviously there's a lot of one-man shows out there. And you know, I think staff, whether it's hired or you know, paid or unpaid, is really something that's kind of imperative to the success of a school. So I kind of wanted to get an idea of where your school started when you first.
Well, first, of course, I was a one-man operation, and I had my one school, and I grew it from a 400-square-foot facility into a 6,700-square-foot facility, and it was all me. I mean, I was signing people up, teaching classes, answering the phone. I would get in at 9 in the morning. I'm sure everybody could probably say that they're doing this too. Get in at 9 and leave at 9:30 at night. And I did that for years, probably 6 years until I built my school up to like a 350-student-based school. And then I was able to say, hey, listen, I'm going to expand, and I opened my second location and started hiring people. And I think that, there are nightmare situations that I could talk about where people, you know, would steal from me that worked for me. Some people, you know, the biggest problem that I find that I run into, and this is still to this day now, even with the incredible staff that I have, is I need to continually follow up on everything that I want done. And I wish I was at the point where I had 20 robots that were just like me, where they could do exactly as I asked them to do and make sure they get it done perfectly and not have me worry about it. But I realize more and more as we grow that I have to follow this concept of having to always follow up and follow through. That's the key word that I use in my staff training. Even my instructors that run their own schools that have staff underneath them, they need to follow up and follow through. They have to constantly give out what needs to be done, delegate properly, and then they need to review consistently over and over again to make sure those duties were done. Because you could say, hey, listen, call all the 2-4-6-week calls and then walk out of the room and they say, okay, and if you don't check up on it in an hour or 2 hours, those people maybe got 20 of them done and they're on to something else and they forget because their primary focus is not that. So that's very, very important to know that you have to follow up and follow through. And then also, too, it's real important from the perspective of students becoming staff members, they need to see that there's a future in it for them. You know, they could go get a job somewhere else, and if they're going to make more money, what's the sense of working for you unless they see that they could do something they love, enjoy what they do, and eventually be able to, you know, make a good living out of it. So that's where you got to start to build this vision and this picture of what's available and how it's worth it to them and so on. Like, I'll give you a few ideas. I have two of my top guys, Tom and Frank. They run my schools. One is a 450-student-based. One is a 350-student-based. Those guys, they have a simple IRA. They have I bought them company cars for Christmas last year, and they get paid really well. The average salary is anywhere from, I'd say, $55,000 to $85,000 a year teaching martial arts. And I say to myself, wow, if I had an instructor that offered me that when I was coming up, I would have easily taken it and been the happiest person in the world. No stress, just teach, go home, and have a great time. So I've made it. I built it to the point where they, you know, if they own their own company, they would be making about that much money. And they're doing it with me with a limited amount of stress. I can't say no stress because they do. I give them a lot of stress by making sure they have to, you know, do what they're supposed to do. But I mean, it's important for us to understand that. Why would people stay with us, and why would people come to us? Now, let's switch the situation. Now, people are saying, well, I can't afford to pay $85,000 or $50,000 buy a company car. Well, that's your goal, is to build up to that. So what I suggest, there's a few things with staffing that I would say looking for the right people is like mining gold, but at the same time, don't think of like saying, I need a black belt to be running, being a program manager. I need a person who has a background in sales to do this. I need a guy to do. You could look And but don't always just look at your people that are the ones that stand out. I'd say, you know, you might have to mine the gold for a little while till you find the right people, but there are a lot of people out there that may want to work in your school that might be a mom who is a incredible secretary who now has children, and she would love a part-time job from 6 to 9 or 6 to 8 at night or whatever your hours are. She'll work 3 or 4 hours a night. And then in situations where you can't pay people top dollar, I would start them off with minimal pay, maybe $100 a week, depending on how many hours they have, but with a commission kind of basis, you know, incentive program. And I think that that's real, real important that people have that availability to them. So if they work hard, they can make more money. And if they, you know, if they put the time in and the effort forward and they're professional about what they do, and of course you have to set these systems up for them, then they themselves can see that there's potential for, you know, for upside. There's a growth potential within their salary, and they would take a commission-based salary. And this is an important kind of philosophy because, you know, we sometimes think, hey, we can't afford somebody, so we'll do it all ourselves. And we can't think that way because if we don't have the right people in place, we'll never grow. We'll be stuck at whatever level you're at because you can't do it all yourself. Does that make sense?
So yeah, totally.
Does it? And I think that that's really, really important. You know, I think, again, too, and I have a lot of these systems in place with forms on tracking, and every single Monday we have our staff meeting. Of course, this Monday was a holiday, so we missed it. But we do a staff meeting in which we have everyone gathered together. I kind of got the idea from Mayor Giuliani's book, Leadership, where he does this thing called ComStat, where every single person who's responsible is in the room, and we go over things where they can't push the blame off on, hey, listen, I told Joe to do it, but he never did it, and Joe's not here to defend himself, so I made sure everyone is there, and we continually go over the stats in our schools. And me, I have multiple locations, 5 schools, so they'll tell me things like how many trials did we have at the one location, how many people signed up, what programs did they sign up on, what area of advertisement did they come from, how much was the contract value on each of the members, and you know, they'll tell me their numbers as far as retail sales, they'll tell me their numbers as far as wholesale sales, they'll tell me their numbers as far as new memberships, renewals, and so on and so forth. So we can get a pulse every single week on what the studio is doing, if we're going slow, if we need to pump up advertising, ramping up referral calls, whatever we need to do to stay on track, because we know our exact, you know, monthly overhead and expense to the penny. And this is what my staff is trained to do. And then on Thursday nights, we do a staff meeting where we continually do training seminars on how to answer the phone, how to sell a trial class, how to teach a class, and so on and so forth. So these are the main staffing issues that I have in my organization with, you know, a 5-school organization. And the one thing I could say, the biggest and most important lesson for people to know in running employees is to make sure that they're empathetic and sympathetic, but at the same time not a pushover. Because people are out there in our society, they want to get high pay, they want to make a lot of money for the least amount of effort. So we need to make sure that we set common goals where they can be excited and feel that they're involved, it's their company. You know, I look at it all the time. My wife was the head of human resources for a Fortune 500 company, and people would love to not work because they said, hey, well, the company's rich, they're making a ton of money. It won't matter if I don't do my job properly or if I steal paper clips and take, you know, all the paper from the copy machine. You know, everyone needs to feel like they're totally on board and they're in the family and they're hard work is going to make, you know, the company a success. Make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay, Joanne, is it good to take a question here this particular thing because it says questions on that, or do you want me to go from the running from a limited staff budget and go through?
Let's actually see, does anybody have any questions or comments right now? Or
none?
No.
Okay, I could go on. It's so hard to talk when I don't really know exactly what people are looking for, because then if they don't tell me, then what will happen is they'll leave the conference call not feeling satisfied.
Right.
So, okay, let me move on, though. So you had in the next section of topics, you were saying running with a limited staff budget. And I think I kind of covered this a little because, you know, we all can't afford to start our people at top dollar. So I totally recommend doing something like first of all, for free, you have people that could do tons of things in your school, like your storm team, your team leaders, and I mean they'll do anything for you, like from labeling envelopes and stamping envelopes to inserting letters. If I have a stack of 1,000 things to get done, we'll get it done in 2 hours, because as my 30 or 40 kids are coming through the door, I said, I'll pick six of them, and I'll say, come on in the office, do me a favor, can you stuff these envelopes? And they'll get them done for me in no time. So I delegate, and they don't mind. They like it. They actually like being a part. They got singled out. They got brought into the office. They're doing something for the school. So we use a lot of our staff members. They help us delivering flyers, and we have some incentive programs with them. When they help us deliver flyers, we'll maybe do a party, a pizza party for them or whatever. But we have a lot of things that get done for free.
How do you feel about making that a part of the requirement for your curriculum?
Well, I mean, I don't think, you know my philosophy is very traditional. So I personally come from a background where I think that the students should pretty much do everything for the instructor and the school.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they should be cleaning the bathrooms, fixing the roofs. I mean, literally, without the school, the lessons in life that you teach are not available. So I believe that everyone should do it for free and do it because they have a giri in Japanese martial arts. It's called like an honor and a loyalty to the instructor. But, you know, we could rewind and say, you know, that's not happening anymore. There's
right.
a good portion of the parents that won't allow their kids. They're always looking for money. Well, hey, my kid did envelopes. How much is he getting paid? You know, they don't see the lesson in doing it and the loyalty lesson, or they don't see that. But I think that putting it in the curriculum is a good idea. I just think that I think you should be really mindful of how far you push people for free.
Right.
It ends up sometimes all the freebies that you give, that people continually give, sometimes ends up, most of the time ends up biting you in the face in the long run. So, like, for instance, I had some phone repairs done yesterday, and a guy came in and he did it, one of my students, and he was here for like 2 hours. And he says, I don't want any money. I said, I'd like to pay you. How much do you make an hour? He says, no, I refuse to take any money. So what I did was I knew that he wanted a few things out of my store, so I went and I gathered them up and I gave it to him. I don't want to really ever have it that it's everyone, I owe people favors continuously.
Right.
But at the same time, thinking about using that whole entire commission-based thing, like I had a guy work for me for about 6 weeks doing phone calls. He used to work for a chimney cleaning company doing cold calls all day long, and he was miserable. He came to work for me, and I was giving him a base salary of $100 a week, and he was making the rest of it on commissions. Like for every person he brought in the door to do a trial class, he'd get $5. For every person that we signed up, and he wasn't even involved in the sign-up process, he'd get an additional $5. So for a person that he got to come in to sign up, he'd get $10. After about 6 weeks, he kind of gave up. And he was kind of demotivated because he wasn't making as much money as he would like. He gave me the whole song and dance. He has a car payment and this and that. And he ended up quitting and moving on to doing his cold calling again at the old company that he worked for. Well, lo and behold, a week after that, we started to get a huge amount of response on all the groundwork that he laid. And then, you know, if he was still working with me, he would have made probably close to $400 or $500 in commission on top of what he was making. So he would have been making an average of $250 to $300 a week if he would have stuck around, a lot more than he's making right now.
Right.
So, you know, you have to lay the groundwork and you got to set it up, but you got to keep refreshing the vision on how they're going to, you know, how they're going to make money, and you need to follow up and have systems in place so that they're not just out there, you know, by themselves blatantly trying to find out what's going on and being lost, because eventually they're going to quit and you wasted all your money and time. And time is just a precious commodity, so we need to make sure that every time that's spent, we need to really, really make sure that it's worth it to us and to the person that's doing it for us. That makes sense? So now we had, you know, a limited number of staff, and I also went over this. I mean, it depends on the school. I would say for every 100 students, you need a full-time staff instructor and a part-time member. For every additional 100 that you add on, I would add on another you know, part-timer, maybe 25 hours a week for every, you know, if you're at like a 300-person school, I think that you could easily run the school with two instructors and one program manager slash administrative assistant. Now, a school with 300 students should be making about $375,000 to $400,000 a year. So that's easily, you could easily pay your staff and your instructors, you know, $45,000 to $50,000 a year and still have a huge amount of profit left over for the chief instructor and the business. So without being, you know, without being cheap, we're able to run a business that will continually have systems in place and people there to make the school grow and, you know, prosper. And now hiring, you have a thing here that says hiring the appropriate staff members. I mean, I could go through a million different things that my wife taught me in human resources, but it all pertains to personality. And, you know, I mean, I've done unbelievable sit-down interviews with people where I thought they were going to be the most model employees. And one of my buddies from Colorado is on right now, and he went over the resume. We had a guy who had a stellar resume. The guy was a military, decorated military vet. He worked with all the generals in gathering in morale. He had employment in law firms where he was able to be the go-between between attorneys and clients. He was unbelievable the way it looked. I got him into work, and he worked like he was like a slug coming out of the gate at a horse race. You know, the bells rang, the gates opened, and he kind of like took an inch and laid there in the sun for hours and hours. It took me 6 weeks before I fired him because he was just milking me every step of the way. He wouldn't return my emails and phone calls. He was the kind of guy who was just there, and lo and behold, he did it because he wanted to get on unemployment, and he had this stellar resume. And I even verified with other employment people, but it ended up being people that he knew, or you know, when I called back and spoke with them, they just didn't want to give him a bad resume because it's hard when you go for referrals from other companies. Literally, if someone gives him a bad resume, it could be a character infringement or I'm trying to look for the word. Defamation of character.
Right.
You know, so you got to be real careful with the questions you ask. And I think in one of the last NAPA magazines, they had a really great article on that, on how you could beat around the bush to get the answers that you need to find out what kind of personality these individuals have. And I know a lot of school owners, myself included, try to breed employees from within. But there is a problem with that. And the problem is that I'm so loyal to my students that I love them all to death, I have a hard time firing them. I'm always looking to, you know, make it work, and I'm always giving them more chances. So one thing I learned from the show with Donald Trump was that, you know, when people are not doing what they should be doing, sometimes you need to do like a corporate reshuffle. You need to find out, like, hey, listen, you've set out the plans of what their job description is. They keep continually falling short. Before getting rid of them, maybe reshuffle them into a different position and see how well they do. So this could be, you know, one of the black belt's instructors. He might be an instructor, but everybody's quitting class because he's so bad at teaching. He may be the guy that's set to be a program manager. Or he may be the guy who's set to do cold calls. So you never know. You have good people, but you're not sure if the actual job description, if it's too broad, it may be detrimental to the, you know, to your association. So those are some points that I had on these things. And, you know, as far as hiring, I mean, the key points that I would look for in hiring an employee would without a doubt be loyalty and honesty and integrity. The second thing would be motivation. I don't even personally look for college degrees, although that's a good byproduct. I look for motivation and dedication, and I think that if anybody's motivated, whether they're college educated or not, they're going to be a success. Like half the people in the world that are rich and famous and multimillionaires were people that were just motivated beyond, and they're not so much educated, but they're highly motivated. So anyway, anybody have questions on so far what I did? Could you feed me some questions and give me some idea or insight on what else you'd like to hear?
I have a question.
Sure.
I have, I've been looking for instructors, part-time instructors.
Okay.
To ideally breed into someday a full-time instructor.
Right.
Instructors. And, we've got leadership team. We train our kids. And
great.
We've got a good crew of black belts. However, for whatever reason up here in Connecticut, they seem to make them real quiet. Whatever I do, no matter how hard I try, I can't get these kids to be, to speak loud. And
right.
We've tried for a long time, and there's just some kids who will not project their voice. They just
right.
won't stand up in front of a group and talk. And unfortunately, my best black belts are not going to be good teachers because they can't, perform in front of.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it that, I say this all the time, and I meet with people and consult with them all the time, and some people have, like, the personality of a rock. And I think that others are just so dynamic and unbelievable that you could tell why their schools flourish. But I think that with the first thing, going back to saying that you have a leadership team, that's incredible. That's great that you have that. I would incorporate things into that leadership team curriculum, such as, and then Melody, has this in hers, it's public speaking, performing on the demo team, things that are going to bring them out of their shell. I just read a study, which was unbelievable recently, that said the average person, by the time they get to 9 years old, have developed their personality for the rest of their life. So I think that the only chance we have with people who are older that have certain character traits is to totally deprogram them and reprogram them. So that takes a long time, but the most important thing is you have to have a really willing participant in order to get somebody that needs to, that will change their personality and work on all the things that they think they need to work on. So I think that it's important for you to, to maybe put together an instructor training program. And I have one, and I actually did it with my buddy in Colorado. I went down there and taught a bunch of his students. students that are in the black belt club, and I did a whole weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, of instructor training, and he mined a lot of great instructors out of it. And I think that it was a good thing for him, and also I thought it was a good experience for me. And I do this at least 2 to 3 times a year, and I have one coming up where I have 14 members in the instructor training program, and I actually charge for it. I charge $700 for a 9-week course where they go to class once a week for an hour and a half. It's a huge moneymaker for my school, but it also is just it's continually building my bench strength to make my studio grow and be able to help me have people in the wings in case I need an instructor when someone's sick. For instance, I have 3 of my head people on vacation this week, but we have a huge amount of people that are much more, they're happy to teach and be out there and be a part of what we do. They've all gone through my instructor training program, and I do not let a black belt on the floor that does not go through my instructor training program. And I do that. If anybody's interested, you guys can call me about it or email me, and I can give you more insight. A lot of what I got, I borrowed from the Kovar Brothers instructor training program, so that was an incredible one that they've done. And I also put a lot of my lessons in of that I've learned over the years of being an employee and an employer into this program. So does that answer some of your questions?
Yeah, I've got another part to that.
Sure.
What about hiring from the outside?
Well, when you're talking about instructors, I don't know. You know what? It would clearly be that it would be whether they can adapt to your curriculum. I could never in my life hire someone from the outside unless they trained for 5 years in my school. Like, my curriculum is so intricate that they'd have to know the Japanese names, the techniques, and it's, you know, I don't know. What style do you do?
Well, we do Taekwondo here, which is, you know, 9 out of 10 schools around here are Taekwondo.
Right.
So I've got a big pool to choose from.
That's sure. Well, then that would be great. If you could do that and find some good people, then I would without a doubt do it. And if you could find somebody, you know, that's just an employee that would be really dynamic. But again, I would say make sure you watch them closely. Make sure their attitude is right with the, you know, with the students and the parents. Make sure at the same time that you institute them slowly and build upon them, but don't make it their classes personality-driven. Make sure you don't like say, okay, you're handling every Tuesday and Thursday my adult classes from now on so that everybody who likes them stays and everybody who doesn't quits, and then all of a sudden if they decide to start their own school, they've already talked and built up a following where they could just leave.
Right. I guess that was kind of my main goal of the question was, if you decide to hire outside of your school, how do you go about finding people, choosing the right ones?
Well, I guess, I mean, it's all an interview process, and I could help you with that. If you want to email me, I could give you a list of things to ask and requirements that you should be looking for. And I think that it's a matter of doing the interview process, getting a good feel. It's almost like if you were interviewing a karate school, how people come in and interview you to make sure you're reputable. It's the same exact thing that you would do in an employee. But then I would also do like I do with my yoga instructors, is to let them go out and teach a few classes for free, or maybe teach the first class for free and give them a $20 you know, for the second class and $20 for the third class, and actually get a feel on how they actually react. And you know, I don't want to see somebody that I'm hiring from outside my organization that I have to take them into my wing and start training them. I want someone that's going to be qualified, charismatic, and able to get the job done right away. That makes sense?
Yep.
Great. Any other questions from anyone else?
I have a question.
Sure.
This is Ron from Philadelphia.
Hey, Ron, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Great.
What do you do as far as ego conflicts amongst instructors where they kind of are more concerned with, you know, I want the students to like me better than the other guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, they kind of take jabs at each other or, you know, I'm not going to take class when the other guy's teaching.
Yeah, do you teach the classes sometimes?
Yes.
So I would beat the crap out of them. No, I'm only kidding. And if it doesn't work, it still just makes you feel a hell of a lot better.
Yes.
No, you know what? I think that, again, that all comes from the environment that you have within your school. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why I could say this is because I had an environment where it was like a black cloud. For like 3 years, I had these staff members that they were brutal, and they would teach for me. They were black belts. No one smiled. People would walk in the door. Parents were afraid. I mean, literally, when they left and I finally got them out of my school and I made the decision, literally it was one of the toughest things because they were like my kids. I brought them up for years. But when I got rid of them, my entire dojo shifted immensely. So what I would do is sit with these people, if you do see that, and have them work out their differences and understand, almost like, you know, a 12-step program, and find out why they feel the way they feel. Make sure you have that vision and really get it across to them so that they know that kind of behavior is just totally not part of what you do in your school.
I've done that, and it worked for a little while.
Right.
And what it is, the situation is we have a younger person who's got tons of experience in martial arts.
Right.
And an older person that is not as experienced as far as, you know, we're talking about maybe 3-4 years
sure.
of martial arts,
sure.
but, you know, life experience and
yeah.
academic degrees, and they each, you know, kind of say, well, you know, I'm
this
I'm
and
the
that.
Senior, no, I'm the senior. So.
Right, right. Well, do you have a, do you have, like, we have in our schools, between our five schools, we actually have a chart which shows the level of where they are, like an administrative chart, and I actually hand that out. Like, for instance, I'm at the top of the chart, and I have two secretaries in my main schools. One of them is my personal assistant. The other one runs in the other school. And then it goes, they're underneath me directly, so, and then they also, are, they work in, you know, correspondence with all the other instructors. And then I have instructors next, and then I have junior instructors, and then I have assistant instructors under them. So everyone kind of knows their hierarchy in the program. And then in my school, being that we're very, very traditional, people are very respectful of rank and who's higher. But there are other guys that I, like you said, I have a guy who might be 20 years old and he's teaching at a school, running a school for me, where other guys are 35 and they just start to understand the, you know, the place of everybody. But everyone has to have the right attitude. Like I said, if you constantly having this one young guy or the older guy and they're clashing, you, that kind of environment should be eliminated from your school right away, because it's going to do nothing but cause, you know, create havoc and give you, you know, you know, a big bunch of stress. So if I were you, I'd nip it in the bud, have another meeting, say, listen, if this continues, you know, we're going to have to let someone go. And then you find out who it is, because, you know, we all hold on to our students because we love them. They're like our kids, and we make excuses for them. But, like, again, my buddy is on from Colorado. He once said to me, I have a friend that I used to stick up for continuously, who would always, you know, do things that were just insane. And he said to me, when are you going to ever, you know, admit that this guy's a jerk? You know, you got to stop making excuses and just take him for what he is and put him in his place and stop making excuses. So that's what you need to do with your staff. You got to say, listen, this cannot go on anymore. If it continues, we're going to have to eliminate your position.
Right.
You know, I know that might hurt you because you may have no one to do the spot. So if I were you, I do this sometimes in my store, which is mostly a retail outlet. I'll just, every once in a blue moon, just put a sign up that says, now taking applications. And it just stirs people up. And then I get a list of people who might be interested in case I do ever have to let someone go. But at the same time, it just kind of gets people in order, and they know that they're not just the only ones, and they could be replaced. So you may want to, you know, let them know, listen, you got to do it my way or it's the highway, because this is my school, my life, my reputation, and what I put into it. So, and if you don't do it this way, we got to eliminate that attitude. You're just not made for this location.
Right. Thanks.
Yeah. I hope that helps.
I think so.
Any other questions, guys, out there? No? Okay. Let's move on to the third topic of the day, which was staff management. And it's the five topics are goal setting, incentive, salary, motivation, and communication. And then we had some subtopics. But I think I covered a lot of this already. But, you know, the goal setting thing is just an absolute key to anything that we do. And I think we tend to neglect this most. Like, I would assume that a good portion of the listeners that are on the radio today don't set goals and write their goals down and follow them and really diligently shoot for them and make them part of their everyday lives. So, but we need to do that. We need to monitor goals for our staff. So in other words, like, I'll have in the beginning of the year, I will do a review where I have my instructors write to me and they'll tell me, or my staff, and they'll say to me what their weak points are, what their good points are, what they've lacked on this year, what they could have done better on, what they'd like to see done in the future. Then they'll go into a whole other section where they're going to give me ideas on what they'd like to be. Like, I just read one from about 4 or 5 years ago from one of my guys, and it said he'd eventually like to get married and have a family and have his own house and have a nice car. And lo and behold, 5 years later, he married one of my other students, and they got married. They had a beautiful daughter. They bought their own house. I bought him a company car, and he's doing very, very well. But these are the kind of things that we need to start to set goals, and we need to monitor them, because they may write them down, and not, if we could stay on top of them for our employees, they're only going to appreciate us more and do better for us and work harder for us. So goal setting is the key. And now forget about goal setting for the employees and their jobs. We need to make sure the employees are goal setting for the company, for the school, making sure that they know that their job is to get 20 new students in a month, or to teach the most dynamic classes of their lives, or to make sure that they get everyone up to all the lessons that they need to know for their yellow belt or their yellow stripe or their black belt test and so on. So goal setting is totally unbelievably powerful, and I think that a lot of people neglect that, and we need to really, really, you know, do it. I know there was a Harvard study that's talked about, and it said that out of 100 members in 20 years ago, or a 20-year study 20 years earlier, this guy polled all the 100 members of the school, and out of the school, only 2% of the members wrote their goals down. And then 20 years later, he interviewed the entire 100 people, and the 2% of the people that wrote their goals down had a cumulative net worth higher than the entire graduating class. So if that says anything for goal setting, that's a really powerful message. And you know, we talked about incentive and salary, and we talked about motivation and all these things. The next thing is communication that Joanne had written down, and she has under it, it says employee handbooks, contracts, meetings, retreats, reprimanding staff. Employee handbooks are incredible. You need to, and I do this with all my guys, and I'm actually writing an employee handbook. And you could go on the internet and search it out. $49.95, you could buy a program that has an entire thing of employee handbooks, and you could put your employee handbook together. In legal jargon, it'll tell you exactly what to do and how to do it. And there are some that are out there for $129, and it goes down as low as $49. But I have the one that I bought for $49, and it tells all the things about vacation days, about do's and don'ts, about how to talk, how to act, sexual harassment, things of that nature, and it's just an amazing thing to have. And, you know, that's when somebody is hired, they get it, and you have them read it, and they have to initial off on a page and say that they read the entire thing. And I think that's real important. And, you know, contracts, I don't know if I buy that. At a point in my career, I used to have my black belts. Once they received their black belts, I did a no-compete contract. I later on found that it was a big waste of my time, that if they were, you know, signing it and they were going to compete against me, they were silly anyway because they knew the opportunities in my school. And why would they go out and try to reinvent the wheel? Why would they go out and try to open up their own school and be my direct competitors when, in essence, they could have a piece of the pie and not have to go through all the 15 years of learning experience that I have? So I think that if it's a contract, it might be an employment contract, something that you would write out and say, you're going to make X amount of dollars an hour, you're going to get 5 vacation days a year, 3 personal days a year, you're going to be able to do all the major holidays, and you're going to get a commission on blah, 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 and this is the way it works. So it's written down, and they sign it, and it's like a regular employment letter that any big company would give you, and then there's no question. They can't say, hey, you told me you're going to be paying me $25 an hour. So that's very, very important when you do that. And I think that meetings, I talked about staff meetings, they are essential to the growth of any school. Even if you have part-timers or team leaders, before class you'd have a little huddle for 5 minutes and have a staff meeting on the theme of the day. You create the zone and the motivation for the day by having that meeting, and I think that that's very, very important. And the next thing topic was retreats and outings. Now, I was joking with Joanne the other day about this, how the last 3 weeks on Monday we've been meeting poolside at my house. I have a nice built-in pool that I have a waterfall that I built on it myself, and we've been meeting, having a fruit salad, sitting by the pool. If anyone wants to jump in the pool and come out and listen, you know, we'll all swim and hang out and then go over our meeting. So we're all there, and it's great. The birds are chirping. You know, we have iced tea or lemonade in the cooler, and it's just a great, great environment. So anything you could do to break up the monotony of being in the same place at the same time every single week, week after week. And then retreats, I mean, it would be nice to sometimes pay for your staff to take them to a boot camp, or, you know, have them go out and do a retreat at a hotel somewhere. I mean, these are things that you could do inexpensively and just build up an incredible synergy and a morale between your student base and, I mean, your staff base and your employees. So I think that that's a really important thing. And as far as reprimanding staff, I think that, you know, they, as we say in teaching martial arts, it's a, you know, always private reprimand, take them off to the side by themselves, make sure you go over it with them. And I would think that you should do it. I actually hold a folder with everyone's name, and I do a 3-strike policy. The first one is a verbal reprimand, the second one is a written, the third one is a written, and the fourth one will terminate their employment. And I make sure that they're clear on all of this, and I've never had to do it, actually, except for one guy that I fired that was just a, you know, total, he milked me of everything. So, I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, I had to get rid of him right away. But I would say that you need to do that, and you need to be clear, crystal clear on what they're doing wrong. And I would have them feed it back to you and say, so what's your perception on this? And they'll say, well, it's true. I should have never, you know, hit the kid over the head with that wooden bow staff. It wasn't the right way to act. Or I shouldn't have, you know, yelled at Mrs. Smith and told her to get the heck out of here. You know, you need to make sure that they feed it back to you so you're clear and they're clear and there's no question about what they did wrong. And I would definitely keep it on file so you can say, hey, this is the second time I talked to you about this situation, or this is the second time I had to talk to you. And it also gives you as an employer a real good perspective on why you're talking to them again. It kind of brings, because after 5 months or a month or two goes by, you tend to be less angry and less upset about things, and you let them slide. Well, this paper report will give you a better perspective of what they're doing in your company. So let's take some questions on that stuff. Any questions on that right now? Guys out there?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I was talking to a client of mine the other day, and we were discussing him hiring a new employee.
Mm-hmm.
And his main question is like, what the average is, like what you should, I guess, what the salary should be. I mean, how you decide what you should be paying someone.
Okay. Well, you know what? It's really easy to see based on, you know, first of all, I know everybody's different. Like I see, I'm on the internet now, and I see, you know, Atlanta, Georgia, Florida, Pennsylvania, Long Island, Ohio, Colorado, and so on. I honestly believe that it all depends on the area to some extent, but it also depends on how much you're willing to part with as an instructor. Like, for instance, if a school has 200 students and their average contract is $1,000 a year, that's 200 grand plus all the extras that you could be doing, which is, you know, gear, special events, and so on. So let's say the school could gross $250,000 for the year. Well, if you have two people, you can afford, in my opinion, to pay out $70,000 in salaries easily, or $80,000 in salaries, $40,000 a person, and still have a huge amount. I mean, if your expenses for the year are, you know, another 50, you could still have another $60,000 or $70,000 or $100,000 for the head instructor. So it really all depends on what you want to spend and what your goals are. But it really, you know, that's up to the level of the owner. It's hard to say. You got to find out what people are getting paid in your area and find out what a similar position in maybe another school or a gym would pay or a salesperson would get paid, and then you kind of work it from there. So I think that that's real, real important. I can never say, you know, pay $10 an hour, because in New York some people kind of laugh at that.
Okay.
You know, but I would think to do a little bit of market research around, you know, call up the owner of the local the Curves or the local Gold's Gym and find out what they're paying their salespeople, or call up the Jackal Lane or the Bally's and find out what they're paying, just to get a rough idea and find out what an administrative assistant gets to work in an office at a factory or a law firm. And then you kind of base it on that. Or you could start low, like I said before, and do it incentive-based. So it's up to the person. If they want to go out there and sell the entire world and get you 1,000 new students, they're going to make a ton of money, but it's all based on their, you know, their motivation and how well they're doing. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, before we move on, I want to know if anybody else out there has any other questions.
Anybody?
How many people are on the phone with us today have staff members that they're paying?
I have one.
Okay.
Okay.
The other ones are through trade.
Right, barter.
Classes, private lessons.
Okay.
And then the other ones are in my leadership class.
Great. Well, let me ask this. Is how many people out there have people that are doing functions that are what we call the KRA, the key result areas in our school? The KRA is the most important things that you could do every single day. For instance, every day every one of my staff members should be, and I'm not saying they always do because things come up, but they should be mining for students. They should be out there trying to get new people in the door. They should be out there doing cold calls. They should be out there handing flyers out and so on. Do people have those people in place in their studio? Guys out there that have staff members?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, so that's the key. And then, but how about the people that are out there that have a lot of part-timers? Do they feel like, you know, all the people who are like they're bartered or they're paying for tuition, are they really totally into it, or are they, you know, just kind of, they're kind of mediocre doing it just to get by?
A little bit of both,
right? So wouldn't you much rather have somebody, like, I know a lot of people that are in schools that have smaller enrollment or even higher enrollment are afraid to add those people on because they know that it's an immediate chunk. Like, what am I going to do if I have to pay this guy, you know, between $30,000 and $60,000 a year or $20,000 and $40,000 a year? That's $40,000 that could go into my family's pocket and my, you know, my daughter's, you know, college fund. Well, I look at it like this. My perspective has always been on big business, and I love, like, the whole corporate mentality of America to some extent, where we know that we have to put money into things in order to grow. Sometimes you have to be real careful because you could grow yourself to the point where you're not making any money and all you do is you're supplying your employees with a job and money and you're the one not making anything. So you got to be real careful, but I think it's real, real important that we understand without the proper people in the positions that we need, we're never going to grow to the points that we need to grow. Does that make sense?
Sure does.
Okay. So any other questions on that? Any other people? No? Okay. Let me continue. I only have 15 minutes. So we had how many people on the line are interested in opening additional locations? Is there anyone that is anyone? Just say I if you have a multiple location already.
I.
Okay. How many schools do you have?
I have three. Actually, one main school and two off-site programs I'm running. One through the school system.
Okay.
And one at a large gym in the area. They have something like 6,000 members.
Okay. Well, I would honestly, in my opinion, I would consider you as still having one school. But you have programs involved within that school, which is awesome because you have alternate programs going on. But it's really mainly managed through your main school, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, so I would consider you as a single school operation with just a lot of hands out into the community, which is awesome. That's a great way to do it.
Right. Well, there's a higher profit margin.
Absolutely.
With doing that.
I envy you for doing that. That's a smart way to go, without a doubt. How many people have more than one location that they're out there with, you know, two schools, two rents, two of everything? Anyone else?
Anybody? Yeah, I've got three.
You have three schools. And do you find...
I got two.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Two.
Two altogether?
Yeah.
Okay, and what is your staffing issues that you found? Do you find that you have, you know, when you went to your second location, did you find that you, initially when you, what your mindset was, did you think that, hey, I'm making a good amount of money here, I'm going to go to my second location and I'll double what I'm making, I just got to have the right people in place?
That was one of them. Part of it was because I had to retake the school that I sold.
Oh, okay, so you went over. Oh, okay. Who's this, Sensei Mark?
Yeah.
Okay, how are you?
I'm just ducky.
Yeah, I remember your situation, and yeah, you kind of like, you, it's almost reluctantly you went into it, but now you're starting to make it work, but it's giving you a headache, so. Yeah, okay, so that, see, I found when I went into my schools, I was like, I was on a roll, and I was just like popping them out for a little while. I opened three in 1 year, and I found that, you know, I knew right away that just by opening five locations, I wouldn't be five times as rich, I wouldn't be five times as successful. I knew that I'd have five times the amount of struggles. And right now, that's where I'm in. My whole entire year this year was a cleanup year where I want to make sure that we're not wasting money, that everyone's working to their full capacity, that everyone is doing what they're supposed to do because, hey, the larger you get, the more room for waste there is. Now, look at Enron. People are shuffling millions off the top of stuff, and people weren't even noticing. I just had in Long Island right here, we just had some school board people get arrested for shuffling $1 million off the top of the school budget for years without getting caught. So it's easy for things to get hidden. You know, so you got to really be, as a multiple school owner, you got to really, really be on top of the game, I mean, to the letter. You have to micromanage to the point where it's almost a pain in the neck. So if anyone's interested in multiple school owning ownership, I could, without a doubt, go into that a little bit more. But right now it seems that we don't really have that topic. So we might, Joanne might want to skip that. What do you suggest? Joanne, you still there?
I'm on mute. I'm sorry.
Brushing over that. Does anyone want to ask me any questions on multiple school, or would you like to take the last, you know, 10 minutes of our time to go over specific questions on how I could maybe help you in your particular environment?
No, I would be interested in doing the multi-school. I mean, I like that idea. You call for Chinese food, 10 minutes. 10 minutes.
Yeah, right.
You know, until it's ready.
No. I don't think that's all. I think that's all they know how to say. That's why.
Yeah.
My guys say that here in Long Island too, but it's. I get it delivered to my house in 15, which is amazing. I think that multiple school ownership is incredible, but I warn them with ultimate levels of care. Not to open up a second location until you're unbelievably staffed with the most professional people and ready to do it because it's nothing but a headache. I would absolutely maximize the income coming out of your school to the absolute hilt so that you couldn't squeeze another thing out of your school before you go into a second location. That's just my advice. I think that you'd be better off if you have a school and you have 200 students to find a way to make it a 400 student school or raise your tuition. And try to, you know, say, okay, well, I'm charging $100 this month. I'm going to have a program that's worth $250 and build another 50 members into that program. And I'm telling you, most of the time, multiple school owners, there's a few out there that are really, really doing well and making a great amount of money out of it. But I definitely I would say that you have to be totally ready. And I would gladly email and talk to you about anybody who wants to email me. You guys know the email is Renshi, R-E-N-S-H-I. LINinja, NINJA at AOL.com, or you could reach me at APS on APSfinancial.com and or call APS or get in touch with Joanne and she'll forward the emails to me and I'll gladly do whatever I can and share with you all the systems that we have in effect that we use to make sure that things are not getting messed up in any way. So Go ahead.
The only thing I wanted to really kind of, exactly what you just stressed, I think a lot of people, I hear a lot of this from just speaking with my clients on a daily basis about, you know, I was on the phone with somebody last week and I said, well, you know, what is your idea of success? And he was like, well, to be honest, I don't want to have to deal with multiple locations.
Right.
I want to be able to, you know, not even, he was maxed out at 300 students on his floor, but there's still 1,000 other areas to grow into with a school that people don't take advantage of.
Absolutely. That's such an intelligent comment that you made, and you're just such an intelligent person anyway.
Well,
you know,
thanks.
You know how I always compliment you. I wish I might hire you one day and buy you a company car and give you your own. No,
I'm going to keep using that as leverage with Jeff, though,
yes.
So you can keep saying that.
I think that the key is, you're totally right. Like, there are so many areas that we neglect within our martial arts schools. And, like, a school could be struggling. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. One of my schools in the smaller towns, the overhead is $7,500 a month. That includes payroll, rent, blah, 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 and everything that you could think of. The whole entire overhead is $7,500. That's about what it cost me to run my Lindenhurst location as well. Those schools have about 60 students right now, and they're just barely breaking even. But when we look at our, of course, that includes their payroll and my payroll as well. But when we look at the problems, we could easily say, okay, we're $800 short. Let's do an income generator. We want to add on this particular type of program, so let's add this on and make that amount of money. And also it just builds this incredible synergy within your school, like summer camps. I know I talked to Sensei Mark Speranza the other day, and I noticed in an ad, I just cut your ad out because I keep all my competitors' ads, and I saw that you just did the summer camp, which I think is ingenious, because how can anyone pass up a one-week summer camp where they can make anywhere between, you know, $1,000 to $10,000 for the week? So these are the avenues of where you got to look, and when we say do we set goals, we need to say, okay, well, what is our optimum goal? What are we going to need to survive in the lifestyle that we want to live? And that's the dilemma, or it could be the situation where it could be very, very nice, because you could say, I'm happy with a salary of $150,000 a year that I could pay myself. Everything else is gravy. I don't mind paying it to my employees. I could become a millionaire in 10 years that way. And I could be happy and not be stressed to the point where I'm like Donald Trump and have to worry about 5 billion things, where I sometimes am in that category where I'm running like crazy, and I say to myself, is it all worth it? Wouldn't it be cool just to go back to one location and out of my one location make three-quarters of $1 million to $1 million out of one location? That would be ideal. But I just chose this lifestyle where I like being in the mix of having a lot going on. But I don't always recommend it to people. So I think that people should really maximize their potential. I think a lot of us sit by and we don't really maximize what we could be doing. We're not setting our goals. We're not looking at our overhead. We're not looking at micromanaging our employees or our staff or our extracurricular events or our summer camps or our, you know, parents' night outs and so on and so forth. I could do a whole entire conversation on special events, which maybe we could do the next time.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the one key that you did mention that, you know, that I can honestly say from knowing a lot of your staff members and having met them, that really the key to success with multiple locations is you can't do it without, like you said, having those staff members that you know you can trust to run that location.
Right. Well, the key is trust, but then also, you know, if I ran and owned a McDonald's, I'd have to have a guy that I could trust, but you never know. They could be stealing from under you everything that you own. So the key is to have systems in place. Now you're at a totally different level of management where you have systems in place to keep the systems in place.
Right.
And this is where you start, you know, monitoring employees. You know, you guys at APS have a lot of employees, so you need to have a whole entire person who's just in charge of maintaining payroll and making sure that there are no issues and there are no sexual harassment things. And,
right.
You know, I've heard some of the funny stories at APS, and it's just that, you know, it's something that we continually have to watch. Like, you know, my wife, who is in charge of human resources, you know, she could pick it out. She'll go, you know, that's a sexual harassment case waiting to happen. This is a liability case waiting to happen. That guy's going to do a, you know, case on, you know, defamation of character or prejudice in the workplace. I mean, there's certain things that we got to watch out for. So we really got to, like I said, once you're at the level and you step out and you become more of an owner, business owner versus being self-employed within your company, you need to start looking things from the ivory tower down, and not saying that the ivory tower is untouchable, meaning that you got to be up there looking down and saying, well, how do I take care of my employees? Like right now, it's a huge amount of stress for me where I have to make sure that everybody in my employment is taken care of. I'm the one, they don't stress, their paycheck is there every Monday. They need to know that they have a good firm employment, but I need to make sure that I get the money there for them. So my responsibility is a lot heavier than theirs, but
mm-hmm.
they also have to know that they have to, you know, live up to their means. They have to live up to their, you know, what they agreed to do. And if they don't, it's better for us. I remember I once heard one of the guys, I think it was John Graydon or Rob Colasanti, say that sometimes it's better for us to get rid of people and fire them, even students and parents, because they're not happy and they're not benefiting by being a part of our employment or being part of our school. They're just not our mix. They don't fit into the mold that we're trying to build. So it's better to let them go rather than keep them along and be miserable.
Right.
Make sense?
Absolutely, as always.
I agree with that.
Well, good. Any last minute? We have 5 minutes, so any last
minute questions? We have about 5 minutes left, right. So
if you want to give me questions or anything like that, first I want to make a plug for my you guys, if you haven't been on the Internet yet, to check it out. My site's almost about to launch, which is a Taking It to the Next Level site, and it's takingittothenextlevel.com. And you could go on there. There's a huge amount of free information, and then there's going to be a pay section where it's a premium section where you could be an enrollment like a monthly NATMA package or a monthly Maya package, except it's going to be geared towards specific growth within the areas that a school needs to grow. So I think that you could definitely, without a doubt, check that out, takingittothenextlevel.com. Email me with your feedback, and we have a lot of articles on referral programs and 2-4-6-week calls and things of that nature. Any other last questions? None? I see a thing on the Internet. I didn't know that people could type in questions. It says, Greg,
yeah, that's pretty cool. I just noticed that too.
If you've got an idea for Mike, you could possibly give them more shine time in class during their training. Call them up from the front of the group to recite the rules, regulations, da-da-da-da-da. Is this the one where he talked about where he has some ego conflicts?
Yeah, basically, Allie.
Yeah.
What I was talking about, it looks like it cut off the rest of what I was saying.
Right.
Basically, what I do with my students is maybe I have their life lessons that they're learning in class.
Right, right.
And maybe if you're working with an instructor that has an inability to speak loudly, maybe he could, in the class that he assists in,
right,
stand up in front of the group and go, the rules of concentration, focus your eyes, focus your mind, focus your body,
right,
as we all know.
Uh-huh.
And basically, after they give those rules of concentration, everybody points their finger at him and goes, hey, Johnny, you're awesome, dude.
Right.
So that's doing some character building and some emotional quotient building for that instructor.
Without a doubt.
Puts them on the spot, and then it'll make Mike's instructor look like the superstar of the class, makes him look like the hero.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think that there's no doubt that what we need to do is constantly build character within our people. And it's like, you need to praise, correct, praise. Pump them up a little, minor corrections, pump them up a little more. And that's going to happen no matter what. And I think that's the key, but I think in Mike's situation too, I mean, or Mike was talking about the public speaking and everything, right?
The second part of what I typed in addressed that issue.
Yeah.
And, for example, if everybody on the phone here is breathes out all the air in their lungs and tries to talk, it's impossible.
Right.
Because no air comes out, no sound comes
right.
out.
Right, without a doubt.
So when I'm teaching my instructors to speak loudly, I just tell them to fill their lungs up with more air.
Yeah.
And try to push it out as rapidly as possible when they're speaking.
Sure.
And their vocal tone comes across rather than being raspy and kind of quiet as a more enthusiastic and positive voice.
Without a doubt. I think that vocal instruction is a key to public speaking, and I think that part of your instructor training or team leadership curriculum, you should probably, tape people. And in my instructor training program, we have a section on public speaking where everyone will have to do a speech, and I do it like kind of like a game show thing. I'll say, hey, Mike, you're up right now. Mike, you got to do it. And, Mike, we're going to talk about the bathing suit cuts in Brazil. Give me your opinion on why you like it so much. And then they'll go off and they'll go, okay, next, Tina, you're up, and talk to me about your favorite ice cream. Joe, you're up next. Tell me what you like most about, weightlifting. And, I don't lift weights. Okay, well, pretend you do. And then we give them scenarios where they're continually just goofing around, so we're building their confidence, and they're actually out there just getting used to talking in public. I know that everyone knows the statistic. They say that speaking in public is probably the number one fear. It's higher than drowning or, getting killed or heights and falling. So this is something that people got to overcome, and I think that's why it's so essential that we teach our young kids this before they hit 9, 10 years old, so that they start to get rid of the fear. And obviously you could tell I have no fear of that, and the reason why is because I was, I was on stage, I did acting, I did music, and I had a lot of early training on, at a young age to do this, and like you said, I had vocal coaches and things like that, but, I think it's the key. So that's great advice. So, Joanne, what are we doing? We're wrapping up, huh?
Looks like we're wrapping up. Anybody have any last-minute questions? No one?
Could everyone unmute and just tell me whether they had a good time? If you guys could give me an eye, if it was good information, did you guys say, was it okay? Did everyone get something out of it?
Very good.
Yeah?
Yes, okay. Good stuff.
Great.
Yeah.
And please, without a doubt, you know, I tell you guys this, and I've only gotten, well, I've gotten a large amount of emails, but please email me. I mean, it's, if you guys are on the computer, it'll take you 5 minutes. We could start some dialogue. I have no problem at all talking about the silliest things. We could talk about different things over and over again. It could be like, Allie, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? And then I might ask your advice on tons of stuff, too, because you guys all could, you know, we learn from each other. So let's start some dialogue. You know, email me or email Joanne. You know, you could email me, RenshiLiNinja@AOL.com. RenshiLiNinja@AOL.com. And I'll go over anything, and if I can email you stuff, but also check out my site and give me your opinion on what you'd like to see. And the premium site is probably weeks away from being launched, and it's going to probably be one of the most revolutionized martial art consulting sites that I, and Joanne will tell you too, the way we're setting it up at APS, and Melody Schumann may be a part of it, and we're doing so much stuff, it's going to blow away the industry when it comes to knowledge and make success things for the school owners.
And just as a comment on that is that, you know, I hear a lot of people out there saying, oh, I want to grow my business, and I want more information, and I want access to more resources. You know, without taking that step and you know, like Allie said, visiting, taking it to the next level, or emailing him, or getting involved in some of the other programs that APS offers, you really are kind of stunting yourself. You're not going to be able to grow without access to that information. So
right.
I recommend that all of you find time, make time, for business education, because if you don't, the only thing you're doing is staying in the same place.
Right, absolutely, without a doubt. Well, hey guys, thanks so much, everybody out there, for having me on again. And I'm eager to help everybody any way that I can. So please take advantage of it. You have a really great company. APS is phenomenal. They're really gearing up to being the best consulting billing firm in the industry. And the only way they're going to be able to do that is by you guys coming forward and asking and utilizing their tools and what they have available to you. So take advantage of it. That's my advice.
Ask questions. That's the only way we learn.
Yeah. All right, everybody, have a great day.
Thanks,
Joanne.
Guys.
Thank you, Allie. Thanks,
Allie.
Thanks, Joanne.
Joanne, we're back on at 4. We have a